It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand
up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, give me cut, dude.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cutted Gee, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And I'm your host, Wakunjahade, which means distant thunder. And my taxpayer name is Robert Pilot. And I guess not only my taxpayer name, Wendy, but also my colonized name.
It is your colonized name. Yes, Robert.
Hey, we discuss national and Twin City Native American news and events here on Native Roots Radio. And as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You can call them at 651-304-9986 Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Wow, I'm going to keep that in the can. That was perfect.
Keep it in the can because I won't say it again perfectly again.
Yes, yes. And I know the feeling because I can't really put together a complete sentence without messing it up.
I think there's some days where you can talk really good and fluently and just go for it. Other days you just can't.
Today I can, but
I'm having a good day. So
I'm about to jinx myself, though. Exactly. So, hey, each day, what is really great about Native Roots Radio is that we have a reporter who speaks about Native news across Turtle Island and also news that has to do with everybody on Turtle Island, too, because, you know, like I say, Native issues are human issues and human issues are Native issues. So, hey, let's get quickly to Ogama up there in the deep north. Welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Bonjour, Robert. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. I just potted myself down, was ready to kick back, and you asked me a question. But yeah, hey, I'm not doing too bad.
All right. So today I have some good news and a call to action from the front lines of the Stop Line 3 movement. So water protectors today erected a teepee in front of the Fond du Lac Reservation Business Committee to call upon the enacting chairman. Their action was successful, and Chairman Kevin Dupuis Sr. has agreed to meet with both Ms. Tanya Abbott and Tayshia Martineau, so that's really exciting news.
Wow.
However, for the call to action, there's a water protector who was previously dragged by law enforcement and is continuing to be being held in Carlton County Jail even after bail was posted. And basically, the enacting judge, Robert McCauley is named, is attempting to find him in contempt because he maintained his constitutional right to be silent. So they've already posted a $3,000 bail for him, and they're refusing to release him. They allege that he's being punished for remaining silent because he technically didn't cooperate with the booking process because he remained silent. And they're also alleging that the jail has not allowed him access to basic hygiene, such as a shower or a change of outfit. They're asking everybody to call Carlton County and demand fair and humane treatment for water protector Aaron Petty. The number is 218-384-4560, or, you know, you can always look that up online. That's Carlton County.
Wow. Ogama, so, he should have been rushing the Capitol at the United States and wanted organic food.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I know. It's outrageous the way that it's outrageous to see so clearly those differences.
That
really bothers me.
You said that, Robert. Seriously.
Wow. So then we do have sorry. Go ahead, Wendy.
No, go ahead. I was just like saying.
She's aghast over
I am just, yeah, it's true. If he was storming the state capitol, they would have been feeding him.
The
national capitol, they would have given him organic food. This poor guy, they won't even let him have a shower or clean clothes. It's disgusting.
Yeah. So more good news from the Stop Line 3 front lines is that there is another camp that's opening near Bagley, Minnesota. So this weekend on Saturday, they're having opening prayers and ceremony and a feast. And then Sunday, there's events planned as well. So I don't know if everybody knows this, but the Line 3 actually crosses the Mississippi River more than once. So this site in Bagley is actually going to be the closest to the first Mississippi River crossing by Line 3. and the second being the other Welcome Water Protectors Camp at Palisade. You can check out the event camp opening ceremony and feast by Rise Coalition if you want more detailed information on that one, but that's a pretty exciting event that those are going to come up.
Rumor has it that you're going to be there.
Yeah, I'm hoping to be there. You know, it just started snowing where I'm at, so hopefully the weather holds out through Saturday. You know, I always worried about the weather in Minnesota, but if I can, I'll be there. In news to the south of us a little bit, you know, we're on in Chicago, so I want to mention that the American Indian Center of Chicago is going to host another online poetry night. So that's going to come up on March 17th, and that's from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Central Time. Their notable past attendees include Sten Jotty, Rhonda Honey Duval, who's Dene, and Ritten, who's Carrie Denny Flynn, who's also Dene. And it is a really, really cool event, and we'll mention it again as it gets a little bit closer to that March 17th date. And you can check out the American Indian Center Chicago on Facebook for the Zoom link once that comes up. Make sure you go on and like and follow them for that. Or like and follow Native Roots Radio if you haven't yet, so that we can share that information to you there as well. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to, I guess, Robert, should we talk about what I did today?
Yeah, you're an influencer, I heard, from the owner of the radio station, so... I'm waiting for your TikTok to come out and be a real influencer and get paid. But yeah, you know, people are listening to us, and I know we have guests that have done this, so it's really great to hear that you've done this today. So why don't you give our audience a little insight about your personal life?
Yeah, so thanks to my tribe, the Red Lake Nation, I was able to get my first dose of the COVID-19
awesome.
Vaccine today.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was a bit of a trip. I don't live on the reservation that I'm enrolled at, but I did make the trip there today and got that first vaccine. And I'm really proud of my tribe for working so hard to get to the point where they were able to vaccinate more of the general public. They're doing a really, really good job. Every building I went into today, I had to go do a couple of other errands while I was there. I was screened at every building that I came into. Everybody was wearing masks and sanitizing their hands. I was really, really proud of my people today. And I just want to let everybody know that I don't at all in any way feel like any sort of a guinea pig or any sort of negative reaction so far whatsoever to the COVID-19 vaccine other than my arm being a little sore. I know the second one I've been told and was warned by the nurses packs a little bit more of a punch to, you know, kind of get your immune system going. But having the opportunity to get this today, I really want to share with everybody that if you have the opportunity to get the COVID-19 vaccine, I truly believe that this is something that you should do. It's important, and it takes care of our people. I have a child, and I asked if they were going to be able to start vaccinating people under age 18, and I actually didn't know this. I was told the vaccine is not approved for people under age 18. Mm-hmm. So if you have children, you need to get yourself vaccinated to help protect your child as well, and our elders and our communities. It's really important. Go get a vaccine if you can.
Yeah, well, Wendy definitely. And I are going to our Ho-Chunk mm-hmm. office in Black River Falls next week. And
on the 25th, I can't wait.
Right. And so it's a good thing, and it really warms my heart that you did it and that it's open for us because it's such a cluster in a lot of different areas, Wendy.
Yeah, and actually the reaction that you're getting is, like you said, Ogama, it's your, you know, immune response. And if you do have a response of having fever, chills, and you're not really feeling that great, honestly, that's something really good, and that just shows you that you have a robust immune system that's recognizing something that shouldn't be in your body, and it's going to cause a memory so that if the COVID-19 virus ever comes to attack you, that your immune system is ready to fight it off. So
exactly,
it is a good response to have. So I hope that when I get my
second shot,
my first one, even if I get a little not feeling so good, I'm gonna say, well, that's awesome, I have a good healthy immune system that's having a robust reaction. So
it's a good thing. Yeah, we're proud of you, Ogama. And then,
yes, fantastic. Good for you.
Yeah, you had to make some effort, but yeah, it's good for everyone, and especially our people are dying at unbelievable percentages, amounts, and so it's great to keep us all safe. So I just want to say Pinigigi for what you do, Ogama, and bringing the news and bringing up being an influencer and being on Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Yeah, as always, I'm happy to be here, Robert. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and up next, Robert Lilligren. We'll be right back after this short break. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Please call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Wow, every Thursday we're really excited to touch base with Robert Lilligren, and Robert Lilligren is works for Native American Community Development Institute. And we really like to touch base because, you know, we don't like to talk about this, but Robert and I are roughly the same age, and we kind of grew up with the same things and are seeing stuff as maybe an older Native now or, you know, in that kind of way. But welcome, Robert.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert, and bonjour, Nindindwemiganadrek. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on every Thursday.
Yeah, and you're really awesome to be on and talk about what's going on Turtle Island, and also, you know, specifically the Twin Cities too. So, you know, you have your ear to the track, so to speak. And one of the things I would really love to talk to you about just for a minute, because we both love radio, and we've both been listening to, you know, the same things over the years, whether it's WDGY or U100 or WCCO with our parents, KQ, yeah, when it was an album rock station. Do you remember those days when they played the whole of an album? Yeah.
Well, I didn't just listen to WCCO with my parents, as my dad was a radio personality there. For decades, for years, and here's a little story. When I started driving, our first button on our radio in the cars was always tuned to WCCO radio, and I was in my 20s before I learned that you could actually set those buttons yourself. I thought everybody's car, the first button, went to WCCO radio. It was a house rule.
Well, my father was an early riser because he was a custodial engineer in the St. Paul Public School District.
Very cool.
And I'd been up with him, and of course, he would be up before I would be up going to school. And we would have WCCO on, and the Boone and Erickson show was...
Oh, for sure.
You know, that's where I learned good morning, but then found out it was from... a movie.
Singing in the Rain.
That's
yep.
right.
And my dad was on in the mornings even before Boone and Erickson. He was the early guy.
Yeah, definitely.
The Milken music. You probably were not up early enough to hear the Milken music.
No. But how about what was the guy that was on at midnight? What he had one last name.
Franklin Hobbs.
Yeah, Hobbs and House. Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
wait.
Yeah.
Okay, let me snap out of this for a second. But hey, we're kind of regressing it because.
Flashback, yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of regressing because in the 80s and 90s, there was a person who just passed away. And also around the same time, Reagan deregulated radio. So, you know, people could own more than one station. And I think a perfect storm of somebody like Rush Limbaugh and the media being owned by only a certain amount of people. We always talk about, what is it, 8%, 8 people own 96% of the airwaves and television and radio.
Yeah, amazing.
And so we're blessed to be on AM 950, our mother station here. That's a progressive station that's owned by one person. So we're really blessed to be doing that. But wow, what a time that was, and what it, he really changed things and really interesting way.
Right, and to see all those seeds planted, you know, the deregulation of the Reagan era, the Newt Gingrich Contract for America, and the sort of idea that there was this moral majority that was silent, and then the voices that came out, right, to speak on behalf of the supposed moral majority. And, you know, Rush Limbaugh was one of the premier. You know, he was really a pioneer in that kind of radio, you know, and I think really contributed to sort of the momentum, the infrastructure that led to the conditions we're living in today, right? Very politically polarized, the demonization of the other side, and those kind of unbridled, unregulated opinion spewers, shouters, you know, like Rush Limbaugh, were sort of responsible. And so I don't think we can really underestimate the contribution of folks like that to kind of the times we're living in today.
Yeah, you know, and I guess we want to talk about our Native stuff, but it's an interesting conversation we're having right here now, too, because I remember prior to Rush, who just passed away, and we're talking a little bit about what he's brought on us and his legacy, was Morton Downey Jr. was almost the same thing on TV for a couple of years there, and it was just bombastic, outrageous things that they would say is truth so many times that they believed it and people that listened to him believed it. And I think that's kind of what the perfect storm has happened with this last presidency and Rush Limbaugh's fans.
I agree. And, you know, it's not necessarily Native stuff, but it certainly contributes to the condition that we still see Native people in, you know, perpetuating hate of people who are different, brown people, perpetuating us, contributing to the invisibility of Native people and stealing the narrative. I think it does relate to Native people. And I think there's just been so much movement in the last few years toward Native people strategically reclaiming our narrative. And, you know, you see successful politicians, you know, to the Congress, being considered for cabinet positions, being elected lieutenant governor of the state of Minnesota, and just all of these movies that are being made by Native directors, writers. Mm-hmm. Just the visibility has been elevated so much, and so kind of the anecdote to the approach of people like Rush Limbaugh and really taking our own narrative under our own control. So it matters how people hear about you and what, you know, it informs how they think about you, you know? And so I think that we're in an era of great opportunity to steer our own narrative.
Yeah. And that's a really great point, because I was just looking at this quote too, and we won't go too much deeper about Rush, but that is a really great point. But here's a quote. Holocaust, 90 million Indians, only 4 million left. They all have casinos. What's there to complain about? And so that was a direct quote from Rush, and that's the kind of stuff that you're talking about, because there was nobody that he wouldn't attack. You know, I remember all the feminazis and all, you know, all those terms. And and so it's... You know, the pendulum swings left to right, and I hope that we're really swinging to the left and really, two-thirds of the country believes in good things, you know, but that brings up another 20 million that don't possibly, and we have to keep on speaking our truth and talk about what matters in Indian country.
Right. And that's what we're doing.
Yep, exactly. Well, we got a couple minutes left in this segment, and let's give everyone a little tease what we're going to talk about next segment, because I think there's things that are coming up here in the Twin Cities with the trial, and I know American Indian Movement is looking to protect Franklin Avenue again, and all these things that are preparing with this trial of the murder of George Floyd.
Yep. So there's a lot of activity on that, certainly going on at the community level, a lot of conversations about how to keep our community safe, how to work with every different level of law enforcement. So I look forward to talking about that. And I'd love to just take a second to talk about Representative Deb Haaland's appointment process, and her confirmation hearing is coming up next week. So it'd be great to have a few words about that, too.
Well, let's talk about that. And we got another minute or so here. And just, I'm sorry about that. I misread the time. But we got another minute here, and we'll get into that in the second part. But, just to finish up, I think what's really good that there's quite a few radio shows and radio hosts that we know in the Twin Cities area that are Native American, mm-hmm. where it's Melissa Olson. We have a lot of people. Roy Taylor. And I was thinking of Jamie Edwards and all those people that, and I'm sure there's more, a few more, but that I can't think of at the top of my head, but there is good work that they're doing. And I know you and I try to amplify our Native voices in the area and be a conduit to what's going on in a positive way.
Yeah. I mean, I just appreciate so much what you're doing, Robert, and really creating this sort of media platform, radio platform that's now going out more broadly. And we need these platforms, right, to amplify the voice, to steer our own narrative. And so it's great to see those. I always say this, but to see those younger people like Melissa or Jamie, you know, who are coming up in the next generation, who are just on such a solid, more solid ground. Their voices are so powerful.
Mm-hmm. And what you know, and we'll leave it at this, we'll take a break in a second here, but I just want to say this, that you and I are at that age right now where we know and we've learned that we, in order for us to keep what we have to give it away. And that's the oxymoron of life is the more you give, the more you get back in so many different ways. And I think that's the only thing my old age has really told me in experience wise.
Yeah, beautifully put. Yeah. You got to give it away.
Yeah. All right. Hey, so let's take a break. We got to, we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm with Robert Lilligren, and we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which my colonized name is Robert Pilot, and taxpayer name is Robert Pilot. I'm here with Robert Lilligren with the Native American Community Development Institute, NADCI, and we're just kind of shooting the talk here. I almost said the wrong word there, Robert, but welcome back.
You can't say that on the radio, Robert.
Right? This is not a podcast, right? we were talking a little bit about radio and kind of the media, but now that's getting a little nuts and bolts of what's going on directly with Indian country. And I know you gave a little teaser about Deb Haaland, and maybe you want to talk a little bit about that.
I would love to. I just think it's so exciting and such an opportunity to see the first Native cabinet member in U.S. history. That's huge. And I just think there's so much story there just about her journey to the position, you know, getting elected to Congress. I mean, that is a stepping stone to this potential appointment and the scope of the authority over the agency she's being considered to run, you know. And this would be an enormous step forward. And so her hearing is coming up next week. It's Tuesday, February 23rd, and it starts at 9:30 in the morning Eastern time. I think most people would agree that this is probably the most controversial of the Biden cabinet nominees' hearings. I think, 7 out of, 23 of his cabinet members have already been confirmed, but this is the one that seems to be sticking in people's craw because it represents such a strong statement by this administration that things will be different.
And equitable, for God's sakes. I mean, I think in Indian country, just how excited we are with this possibilities and what it means to land and pipelines and things like that, and her story, Robert, is an unbelievable story. A single parent on welfare, making things happening, and then becoming what the Caucasians like to say is self-made, but I mean, just working and working hard and getting to where she's at.
Right, right. And then I know it's an amazing story. She seems like an amazing person. And then to look at the Department of Interior, she'd be the Interior Secretary, you know, so that has to do with minerals, it has to do with energy, mining, federal lands, it has to do with native lands, and it's a perfect place for a person like Deb Haaland to be, like you said, to create sort of a more equitable way of going forward. And when you look at what's happening in Texas right now, where somehow they're blaming windmills and the Green New Deal on the situation that they're in. I mean, it's ludicrous when the situation that they're in is caused by their dependence and celebration of being, you know, of using fossil fuels. And so, here's someone that's...
And deregulation.
Yep. And deregulation. Right. And so here's a person, a potential Secretary of the Interior, who would bring a very different perspective, and those people that, you know, will find that frightening. They'll find that terrifying that she might be the Secretary of the Interior. And so I think for listeners to contact their senators, encourage their relatives, especially those living in red states, to contact their senators in support of Deb Haaland's appointment. Again, the hearing starts on Tuesday.
Yeah, we had a person whose brother was a hockey goalie for the University of Minnesota come out right away and say that Stauber said he wasn't going to vote for her. And it's interesting because what he represents, I think we talked about this before. It's like four or five tribes, right, that are in his area, and we know when the native vote comes out or comes out against you that we do have power, and we've proven that in the last couple of elections.
Right, right. And so, right. So Stauber, Pete Stauber, is a Minnesota congressman, and his district is in northern Minnesota. It touches on, I think, at least three reservations. And for him to come out with that position just seems so tone deaf to the people he's supposed to be representing in D.C. But that he's not alone. You know, that's one voice amongst many that are going to be raised in opposition to her appointment.
Boy, it just seems like, the right and are just afraid of Native Americans. I mean, it just seems that way, you know, more and more just opposing and the attitude of getting over with things. And it's just become so apparent when we run into situations like this.
Right. Right. And when we're in an era where there's such so much greater willingness to have some truth telling and to have some different conversations, but there is a group within our country, very well organized and politically engaged interests, that do find this very, very threatening. They feel like they're losing something. Deep down, I feel like their biggest concern, their biggest fear, really, because I think they're driven by fear, their biggest fear is that they will be treated as poorly as they treated Indigenous people, as poorly as they treated people from Africa. They fear that they'll get treated as poorly as they treated others. And so acting out of fear, they're just doing everything to hold on to power.
Right, and not hiding the fact. Not hiding the fact
right.
at all. I mean, I think I think things have been settled down, and then in the last 4 years, I think people, you know, have just come out and said, screw it, I'm going to tell you how I really feel. And I mean...
Right, well...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, kind of going back to what we talked about in the last segment, this idea of a moral majority, you know, and really we have a minority party that can hold extreme power in this country. I just saw a statistic recently that said in the divided Senate with 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans, the Democrats represent almost 43 million more people than the 50 Republicans. And that's just mind-boggling, you know. I'm just, that this minority voice has so much power in this country.
Well, the gerrymandering. I mean, we had a Ho-Chunk lady running in Wisconsin, Trisha Zunker, and There's no way to get traction in those gerrymandered areas. Hey, I know
gerrymandering and voter suppression Yes. We should sort of leave that on the table as well.
Yeah, thank you.
When you look at how many voter suppression efforts are in front of state legislatures right now, it's in the dozens.
Yeah, exactly. Boy, you really do have your ear on the tracks here, because I've been hearing that too. And I know you got to get going here in a couple minutes, but what I would really love you to be do is to tell our audience what you're going to be doing tonight.
Oh, yeah. I'm going down to see this incredible art installation done by a Native artist. The project is called Illuminate the Lock, and an organization called Northern Lights is leading the effort. But the organization I work for, NACDI, and our gallery, All My Relations Arts, are partners as well. And so we've helped bring this artist, Miri Villiard is her name. I've got her mentorship from Jonathan Thunder, and she's going to project a big piece on the lock in the Central Riverfront of Minneapolis. And it just sounds like such an exciting project. One of our staff at NACDI, Alex Buffalohead, Alexandra Buffalohead, was down at the test run last night, and she's been doing a lot of work and helping to coordinate this, and she said it was just stunning, breathtaking. So I'm going on to take a look today.
And so can you give our audience what other days there are, or is it just tonight, or...?
It goes through the weekend, and so the you can make reservations if you Google Illuminate the Lock or Northern Lights Minnesota. You'll get to information. I know the response has been huge, and it goes through through the weekend, and it's done in coordination with the exhibit at All My Relations Arts Gallery, which is Bring Her Home. It's a show that lifts up themes around missing and murdered Indigenous women, an annual show we have.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, are you on, when are you going to get your second vaccine?
I get my second vaccine tomorrow. Oh, thanks for asking.
Wow.
I hope folks are staying in touch with their Indian health services, either even on the reservation or in cities. Leech Lake here in Minnesota has really opened up vaccine. I mean, just my advice would be to get on as many lists for vaccines as you possibly can. And, you know, I was on the list at our local Indian Health Board clinic, and then one day they had a vaccine that was going to expire, you know, that they needed to use up. So I got a call because I was on the list. They're calling through their list. Can you be here by 2:30 today? I'm like, sure thing. So that's how I got my first shot. And, you know, otherwise it would have gone to waste.
Well, that's awesome.
So it's the second shot tomorrow. I cannot wait.
Yeah, and you're an influencer, so it's really great to hear you say this over the airwaves. And I know we have Dr. Stately on Mondays, and just hearing the updates and what he's gone through. And so Wendy and I are going to Black River Falls because I'm Ho-Chunk, and they're going to vaccinate us next Thursday. And
good for you.
And be able to get Wendy in too, because a significant other or husband, wife,
I love it,
that live at the same address get vaccinated too. So that's a good thing, because I was trying to get through the teacher corner, and that wasn't the case. And so, you know, you got the vaccine, then you get it 30 days later, and then 14 days after that, you're good to go. And then I'll be ready to go back to school after, well, I guess for me, it won't be till April, but it's great to hear from you, and great to hear that you're getting vaccinated. Is your husband getting vaccinated too?
Not yet. Nope, not yet. I didn't see, I don't think I had the benefit of bringing my spouse to get vaccinated. But I'll look into it.
Because it makes no sense if you're vaccinated and he's not. So.
Right.
Well, I know you need to get going, and I really, really appreciate your time and your effort, and also your knowledge about what's happening on Turtle Island. Really, Pinigigi, Robert Lilligren.
Yeah, good. Thanks.
Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Alusa Nation.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh! Wow.
That was a pretty lame howl there you got there, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you. hey, I wanted to, first I want to say all things are relatives, and what we do to everything we do to ourselves, all is one. Black Elk. Black Elk said that. I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot. Wendy has been an animal advocate for many, many years, and this is our portion of the show, which we like to call our sacred animal portion of the show. Wendy, please introduce yourself and tell us what you got for us today.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Hanajihi Hani, and that means cares for them. And I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And today I'm going to be talking about the severe weather and how it's affecting some animals in Texas. Wow. So there was a tragic story, which I just want to cover very fast, because it really, honestly, when I read the article, it you know, shook me to my core. There's an animal sanctuary in Texas with primates, so monkeys, chimpanzees, lemurs, and many, many of them died because of the, they froze to death because, you know, they're just not prepared for this cold weather. You know, no one was prepared, and that's why everybody is, you know, in so much trouble. I mean, Robert, honestly, I'm thinking about us, and we're not prepared. We're not prepared here. If there was a tornado, let's say we got a tornado warning, right? We should probably have a space underneath our basement stairs, right? Where we could go down there and be there in an emergency with our animals. We have two dogs and a cat. Yeah. And we're not prepared. So we need to prepare that, because you just never know. We need to be prepared. I know you're laughing at
no,
me.
No, no, no.
But honestly, I have this article here, and it's from The Garden Gun, and it's just dated February 17th, and it's talking about these cold, stunned sea turtles in Texas. And what's happening is these turtles get cold stunned. And what that means is they get so cold in the water, their body temperature goes down so fast that they can't move. So they can't swim. They can't eat. They can't even lift their head above the water, and then they could die. And there's hundreds of boats out there right now, just people like you and me, if we had a boat.
We do have a boat.
Out there. I know we do, but we're not in Texas.
Oh, okay.
But it was like 45 degrees, and I know for us that sounds like a heat wave, right?
Right.
But for these Florida, these Texas turtles, it's freezing for them.
Right.
So there's these people down there in Texas, in the Padre Islands right now, scooping up these turtles and bringing them to a big convention center where they have these warming tarps on the ground of the convention center. There's over 4,000 turtles there right now. And they have to slowly heat them back up. And then they could release them back into the water. I think this week it's going to be up to 60 degrees there, right, so that they'll be able to do that. But I, you know, again, there's thousands that will die. But I want to give a shout out to all the people out there who are taking their time, and using their boats and their fuel and being out there in the cold temperatures, you know, saving these turtles. So last Sunday morning, when green sea turtles started floating to the surface of the shallow Laguna Madre Bay on South Padre Island, Texas, Captain Henry Rodriguez, and he's one of them, was already waiting to pull them into the water. Quote, "I'm used to going in when everyone's going out," he says, and studying the weather conditions and the currents and the tides. "I knew that the turtles were going to be stunned by the temperature drop on Valentine's Day." Using his boat from his private tour company, Henry's Charters, Rodriguez has spent the past 4 days rescuing hundreds of turtles and delivering them to a holding center where they can recover. He's not the only one. All told, since Sunday, thousands of sea turtles have been pulled from the waters and beaches of the South Padre Islands. Sea turtles are ectotherms, which means their body temperatures are dependent on their environment. When water temperatures drop suddenly and turtles don't have the time to move to deep water where it's warmer, they can become hypothermic. Unable to swim, they float to the surface where they're easy targets for predators or boat strikes, or they simply freeze to death. Rodriguez rescued 105 turtles on Sunday, then another 142 on Monday, and 152 on Tuesday, navigating bone-chilling 45-degree mile winds through rough waters. Quote, I would see one floating and say, this is the last one we can fit. But then he would see another one and keep stopping until there was no more space to walk around the boat. He's back at it again today, collecting turtles that have washed ashore because he is exhausted. He has not exhausted his fuel. You know, every time I do, I just want to say this really quick. Every time I do my sacred animal section, our cat busts the door down and starts meowing. Not any other time does it happen.
Part turtle.
Exactly. I'm just story really just warms my heart that people are really doing this. Pulling the turtles from freezing waters is only the first step. You can't just put them in the heater and warm them up in an hour. They'll be okay, Rodriguez says. You have to gradually warm them up or you'll shock them. He first delivered his cargo to Sea Turtle Incorporated, a nonprofit on the island devoted to conservation, and took their volunteers out with him to help rescue more turtles. But by Monday, the center was already at its capacity, and its lack of electricity made it hard to treat the turtles. The South Padre Island Convention Center stepped in and volunteered its space, and now the floors are covered in thousands of sea turtles. So these, and they keep arriving, and there's over 4,000 of them, and there's pictures of them online. But this, for Rodriguez, his involvement in the rescue efforts is an act of respect for the waters he depends on for his livelihood. Quote, I put food on the table for my family from this ecosystem, he says. And if I am able to do something for that ecosystem, I am sure going to do it, and I'm going to try. Isn't that awesome?
Well, that is totally awesome, Wendy. Wow, what a great section here. That warms my heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the funny thing when you were talking about this story, too, is that I know you and I would have been out there.
Yes, absolutely. Without a doubt, we would have. We would have ran to the store, got some big nets, and we would have been out there on the pontoon. Well, I don't know. In rough waters with the pontoon, but yes,
we would have did what we could.
And I'm going down to the basement and get the area under our steps ready so that we'll be able to be safe during a tornado or other disaster and have our pets under there safe with us.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I'm glad you retired and be able to do stuff like that.
I know, right?
Wow. Hey, you're not really retired because of great comments and segments you do for Native Roots Radio, so you're far from retiring. Mm-hmm. So I want to say Peeny Gigi, thank you so much for the sacred animal section, and our cat is saying Peeny Gigi too. See that? Wow.
It's my pleasure. That's Lucy, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, I would like to end with these thoughts. Hey, this show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people. We are the resistance. We are awake. I want to end with these thoughts. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. The revolution is to kicking into high gear, and I want to thank Wendy, as always, Wendy Pilot, Ogama, Robert Lilligren. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We are still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.